Shalom, everyone. My name is daughter of Israel Abel Sarah, and I want to serve you forever as a priestess starting very soon. Please find your seats for Sabbath services.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. My name is daughter of Yisrael Abel Naharia, and I'd like to serve you forever as a priestess starting very soon. I would like to present to you the sons and daughters of Yisrael Abel now into the sanctuary.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. My name is daughter of Yisrael Abel Sarah, and it's a privilege to welcome you another House of Yahweh Women's Presentation. Please remain standing as I present the first speaker, Omia.
Shalom, everyone. Please be seated. My name is Omi Alexander Hawkins, and the title of my speech is We Are Almost There. We are very close until the end. We have been granted the opportunity to wear this fine linen, which is the righteousness of the saints. Turn over to Deuteronomy 6:25. And it says, and it will be our righteousness if we observe to do all the law before Yahweh our Father as he has commanded us. Righteousness, the laws of Yahweh. We have been learning about the frequency which this fine linen carries, which will bring us closer to Yahweh. Without Yahweh's laws and the prophecies, without our great teacher, without coming into unity with each other, we will never obtain frequency, this frequency that Yahweh wants us to have. It can either work for us or against us. So I encourage each and every one of us to strive to put forth great effort through wearing the linen and our actions towards each other. Now I'd like to turn it over to the next speaker.
Shalom, everyone. You can be seated. The title of my speech is Instruments of Peace. Is this an instrument of peace? No, it is not an instrument of peace. An instrument of peace is someone who keeps the laws of Yahweh or who seeks peace. Please turn with me to Psalms 34, verse 14. Psalms 34, verse 14. It is on page 446. It says, seek peace, pursue it. Depart from evil and do righteousness. So seek peace. For conclusion, I like to tell you to seek peace and be an instrument of peace. Have a great rest of the feast, and I'll turn it over to the next speaker.
Shalom, great saints of Yahweh. Please be seated. We have an awesome presentation prepared for you today. Are you ready? That's great. Before we get started, I'd like to remind you, our previous women's presentation, it was mentioned that the kingdom of Yahweh has to be real to us. I'd like to remind you of a quote from the fourth book of Israel, the Reverence of Yahweh, number 6, verse 8. Our pastor says, the kingdom of Yahweh is going to have to be, it's going to have to become as real to you as the hand on the end of your arm. How real is your hand on the end of your arm? Do you have any question about that? There's absolutely no doubt, right? Some of you are looking at me like I'm crazy. But that's how real the kingdom of Yahweh has to become for us. Our pastor goes on to say, you're going to have to want it so desperately that you would give up anything at all to have a part in that kingdom. And as we wear this fine linen, we know that we are on trial right now. And our works are being shown to the entire universe to prove that we will be righteous leaders, righteous guides, and righteous teachers. Luke 12, verse 32 says, don't be afraid, little flock, for it is Yahweh's righteous pleasure to give you the kingdom. So as we wear this fine linen, and as we are on trial, I say to all who are witnessing, you are witnesses with Yahweh of how holy and righteous and blameless our behavior is among those who believe. That's 1 Thessalonians 2:10 if you want to write that down. And great saints of Yahweh, I just want to remind you of the job that we have before us, the job that we are qualifying for right now. Now they live if we stand fast in Yahweh. And with that, I would like to turn it over to our first speaker. Please welcome.
Shalom, everyone. You all can be seated. My title today is, What Do You Choose? So please turn over to Revelations 19, verse 8. That's Revelations 19, verse 8, found on page 983. And it reads, and to them was granted that they should be arrayed in fine linen, clean and white, for the fine linen is the righteousness of the saints. So a few weeks ago, I was reading a sermon, and Pastor was saying how linen is nothing but humility. And in order for us to be fit to wear our linen, we have to be humble. And in the first book of Israel, chapter 23, verse 16, Pastor says, Yahweh told you to humble yourself to the teacher he puts over you. I'm not trying to build myself up. I have never been guilty of doing such a thing. Yahweh will build you up if you do what he says. He will guide you. If you do not humble yourself and you hang on to this pride, you are not going to be in my house. As Joshua said, you are not of my household. I never knew you. And you just do not fit in with the rest of the family. So I hear a pastor saying that when you're not humble, you separate yourself from the family. And he's also saying that you won't make it into the kingdom if you're not humble. So now let's break this down into little parts so we can get a better understanding of this humility. The definition of humble from Merriam-Webster's dictionary is not proud or arrogant, not thinking of yourself as better than anyone else. And the greatest example of someone who is humble is Yahshua. And if you turn over to Philippians 2, verse 5 through 8, that's Philippians 2, verse 5 through 8, found on page 922, it reads, let this mind be in you, which is also in Yahshua Messiah, who being in the form of Yahweh, did not think it was something to be seized upon to be equal with Yahweh, but abased himself, taking the form of a servant, made like men, being born, and being found in fashion, appearance, and conduct, like a man. He humbled himself and became obedient unto death, the death of the sacrifice on the stake. So, as you see, Yahshua lowered himself. He was humble. Remember? Not proud or arrogant, not thinking of yourself as better than anyone else. He humbled himself and served others. And this isn't the only scripture that talks about how Yahshua was being humble. Because in order for Yahshua to be able to serve, he also had to be humble. So he had to humble himself so he can serve others. And that is the perfect example of how we need to be in these last days and throughout all eternity. Yahshua humbled himself enough to die on the stake for us so we can have a second opportunity. If Yahshua wasn't that humble, do you realize that we wouldn't have any of the opportunities that we have today? So we need to humble ourselves just as Yahshua did, because Yahweh resists the proud. He doesn't accept it. And in the second book of Israel, chapter 6, verse 105, Pastor says, "It is probably the hardest lesson to learn because Satan did not have humility. In fact, she wanted to raise herself above Yahweh. She taught self-glory, and this is the reason that we must get it out of ourselves. Yahweh simply will not allow it into his kingdom or into this new world." So Satan was prideful, and that's how she raised herself into a god. So it's as simple as just not being humble. And so in closing, I just want to encourage you to humble yourself and don't be prideful, because that's exactly what Satan did, and that's how she turned herself into a god. Well, yeah, technically. And with this, I'll turn over to the next speaker.
Shalom, everyone. Please be seated. My title this morning is "Our Actions Determine Our Future." I want you all to turn over to Revelations 19:8. And it says, "And to them it was granted that they should be arrayed in fine linen, clean and white. And now notice this, for the fine linen is the righteousness of the saints." So now you can see that it is granted that the righteous will wear this fine linen. But now it's not going to be like you put on your linen and it's like, "Oh, I'm so righteous now." That's not how it works. Because if we go around sinning, then put on our linen garment, it will do nothing to us. We have to practice the laws, keep the laws, and follow every instruction given by Yahweh's house. Then we can be those holy, righteous saints dressed in fine linen. We cannot go around accusing others for something that we did wrong. When our authorities correct us for something that we did wrong, we can't be like, "But look what she did. Did you see what she did to me? Or you should have corrected her, because me compared to her, I'm so much more righteous." No, we have to get that way of thinking out of our mind. We have to realize that when people correct us, they are trying to help us get into the kingdom with our linen garments. But it's all up to us whether we take that correction to heart. Turn over to Proverbs 19, verse 20. And it says, "Listen to advice, accept instruction, correction, and in the latter days you will be wise." When we take that correction to heart and we actually listen to it and work on ourselves, that right there will help us be one of the righteous saints that are clothed with fine linen. We also have to learn to get along with one another. When Yahweh's kingdom comes, we can't still be fighting with one another and going off on people just because they did something that made us mad. Not only do we have to get along with one another, but we have to treat all people the same. When we treat others differently, and like when we see some person, we're like, "Oh, shalom, praise Yahweh." But this other person, who we can't seem to get along with, every time she passes by, we roll our eyes at her, and you don't even think to say shalom to her, because, I mean, come on, you don't even like her. No, doing that prevents us from being that saint dressed in fine linen spiritually. Turn over to Jacob 2, verse 3-5. And it says, "And if you pay special attention to the one wearing the fine linen clothes and say, 'You sit here in the best place,' while you say to the poor man, 'You stand here,' or 'You go sit at my feet,' have you not shown partiality among yourselves and have become judges with the ones of evil thoughts? Listen, my beloved sisters. Has Yahweh not chosen the poor of the world to be rich in the faith and heirs of the kingdom which he had promised to those who love him? Look down to verse 9. But if you show respect to persons, you commit sin, are convicted by the law as transgressors." Everyone in Yahweh's house deserves to be treated equally. When we treat others disrespectfully, not only are we taking the linen garment away from ourselves, but we are discouraging that person to keep their linen garment. I want everyone to keep in mind that we are here to obtain this linen garment of righteousness. And that is the only way that we can get this linen garment, is if our action is right with Yahweh. Our actions will determine whether we will keep that linen garment or that linen garment will have to be ripped off of us. I beg you that we make our actions right with Yahweh. And with this, I'll turn it over to the next speaker.
Shalom, everyone. Please be seated. So I want to start by saying that pastors' sermons have been so amazing. Wouldn't you all agree with me? They've been so in-depth and full of information and encouraging. So I've been sitting at the edge of my seat trying to write down everything so I can rehearse it and study it. And they've just been so incredible. And he's either been giving two kinds of sermons. The ones where they're just full of information, you're trying to stuff it all in your brain and keep it there. Or the ones where you're like, okay, I need to get it together. I need to start overcoming really fast. The kingdom is literally less than 3.5 years away. So a few weeks ago, before trumpets, Pastor gave one of those wake up, get it together sermons. And right at the end, he said, your people will have proved themselves worthy before. Look that up. Study it. You could write an article on it. So immediately after prayer, my study buddy who sits right next to me was like, that's Psalm 110 verse 3. And Psalm 110 verse 3 says, your people will have proved themselves obedient to the law on the day you go forth on power. They will unite with you, arrayed in their holy garments. Like the morning dew, they will completely cover the earth, governing with you. So today I'm going to do my best to cover the first half. And first, let's look at the grammar. It's not bad. If you realize, it's in future tense. It says they. If it was for that time, it would have said, we will unite with you, arrayed in our holy garments, but it said, they will unite with you, arrayed in their holy garments. So that's future tense. And it hasn't been granted to us until now, in this generation, to be arrayed in the fine linen holy garments. Because in Revelation 19:8, it tells us that they will be granted to wear their fine linen garments. So this is a scripture written for a different time period, and we know that is our time period right now. So let's take it line by line, because it is written precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little and there a little. And the first part, your people. So we know that we are the children of Yahweh if we keep his laws. And Yahweh tells us that if you truly obey my voice by keeping my covenant, that he will make us his special treasure over all people because all the earth is his. And he also says, I will say, it is my people, and they will say, Yahweh is my father. They will say. So if we keep his laws and we do righteousness, we, the house of Yahweh, are Yahweh's people, the sheep of his pasture. In this next part, the word proved. So the word proved means to establish the truth or genuineness of by evidence or argument. It means to determine the quality, amount, acceptability, and characteristics. To be found by trial or experience to be. Does that not sound like what we're going through right now? We are on trial now, hopefully to our honor. The Apostle Shaul said that we must present ourselves as living sacrifices acceptable to Yahweh. In Thayer's Greek lexicon, proved means to test, to examine, to prove, to scrutinize, to see whether a thing be genuine or not. Yahweh has come to test and prove us so that the reverence of Yahweh will be with us so that we do not commit sin. He also said, and I will bring a third part through the fire and refine them as silver is refined, and I will try them as gold is tried. They will call with my name, and I will hear them. Yahweh is proving us right now. We are on trial in his courts daily. And it is such a great blessing to know that we are on trial in his courts, even though the test can be really hard. And you're just like, I don't know how I'm going to get through it. But a day in your courts is better than 1,000 other days. Moving on, the word establish, which wasn't the meaning of proved, it means to put beyond doubt, to set up on a firm or a permanent basis. In Strong's, it means to appoint, firmly placed or foundation. The righteous will have an everlasting foundation. Our hearts will be established, blameless in holiness in the presence of Yahweh with all his saints at the coming of our King Yahshua Messiah. So far, we see that it says that Yahweh's people will have been proved. We will be put on trial. We will be established. So this next part says what we will have been proved by. It says, prove themselves obedient to the law. Obedient, in Thayer's Greek lexicon, means alternative hearkening. And hearkening means to give heed or attention to what is said. It means compliance or submission and obedience. And in Hebrews, Yahshua tells us, obey those who have rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls, as they must give account. Do your part so they can do so with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you. So who has this rule over us and who is giving this account? And in Brown, Driver, and Briggs, obedience means beneath, obedient, as response to someone speaking. This refers to an earthly voice or Yahweh's voice. And Moshe told us that Yahweh, your father, will raise up for you a prophet from among your brothers, and him you must listen to. Yahshua told us that it is the work of Yahweh to obey the one whom he has sent. Pastor Yisrael Hawkins is the voice whom we must obey. He is the voice and teacher Yahweh has sent us, who is giving account of us. He told us that he goes to Yahweh daily giving account of our works, whether righteous or evil. And it tells us to do our part so they may do so with joy and not with grief. When we do evil, when we do wrong, and pastor has to bring that to Yahweh, do you not realize that brings him grief to report and say, well, they didn't make right choices today, Yahweh. They did not choose righteousness. Do your part so they may do so with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you. So the law that we are proving ourselves obedient to is none other than Yahweh's 613 laws, which pastor proclaims every time he speaks or he sends messengers to speak for him. Because it will be our righteousness if we observe and do all of this law, because the reverence of Yahweh is his treasure. So far, in Psalm 110, verse 3, we have that we, Yahweh's people, those who keep his laws, will have established ourselves as acceptable in Yahweh's court, as obedient to the voice he has sent, Pastor Yisrael Hawkins. The next part tells us when it will be. On the day you go forth in power. So who is this being that's going forth in power? And if you notice right next to the verse, there's a little Hebrew letter, Aleph, which indicates a prophecy foretelling the return of Yahshua Messiah. And you can find this in the front of your book of Yahweh. It sells like any, I don't know, sometimes you'll see like a little black dot or a letter or a number. And in the front of your book of Yahweh, it explains what all of those are. And in Matthew 24, it tells us that immediately, but after the great tribulation, the Son of Man will come in the clouds with power and great glory. He will send his Malachim to gather the elect from the four winds of the earth. Yahshua Messiah is the one who will go forth in power. And this word power, it means the capacity to direct or influence the behavior of others or the course of events. And we know right now Satan has that power to influence us in the world, in the whole world, which pastor explained is the universe. She has that power right now. But on that day, when the kingdoms and the governments and all that is in them will be turned over to the saints of Yahweh, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, all governments will serve and obey Yahweh. Yahshua, we will also, under the guidance of Pastor Yahshua and Yahweh, have that power, that influence over all the nations. And in Greek, power means miraculous, power, might, and strength. The strength of Yahweh is his laws. And Yahweh says, not by might nor by power, but by strength, but by his spirit, which is his laws, we will govern. Those who keep Yahweh's covenant, he will bring through the fire, and they will establish themselves as acceptable in Yahweh's courts, obedient to the voice of Yahweh, Pastor Yisrael Hawkins. They will go forth in power, influencing with the laws, which are the strength of Yahweh. We are training now to be future citizens of Yahweh's Shema, who will prove ourselves worthy. Now, a very wise person, my dad once said that Yahweh is creating a group of pure, untouched people who will love righteousness more than anything. We are becoming this group of pure people. And I want to leave you with the scripture that I found when I was studying it. If you all would like to turn over to Revelation chapter 7, and it's verse 13. And it says, "And one of the elders asked me, 'Who are these arrayed in white robes? And where did they come from?' And I said to him, 'Ruler, you know.' And he said to me, 'These are the ones who come out of the great tribulation and have washed their robes and made themselves white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore, they are before the throne of Yahweh and serve him day and night in his house. And he who sits on the throne will dwell with them.'" Thank you to the greatest teacher in the world, the great Khan, Pastor Yisrael Hawkins, for allowing me to speak today. Pastor, thank you for teaching us, begging us, encouraging us, and leading us into the kingdom of Yahweh, because we won't make it without you. Please stand for the next speaker.
Shalom, everyone. You can be seated. The title of my speech is Honorable Saints in the City of Yisrael. So, for my first scripture, if you could turn to 2 Timothy 2:19 through 21. It says, however, in a great house, there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay, some for honor and some for dishonor. Therefore, if a man purges himself of sin, he will be a vessel for honor, sanctified and fit for the Father's use and prepared for every righteous work. It's important to understand that you and I can fit this category. We can actually fit that category. Because when we purge ourselves of sin, when we confess our sins every week and we truly repent and we throw off the old person and we put on the new person, you know, living by Yahweh's laws, we become vessels of honor and we become fit for Yahweh's use. But we choose what type of vessel we're going to be. So we can either choose to be complacent, mediocre, less than the best vessels of clay, or we can choose to be vessels of gold and silver, you know, arrayed in fine linen, the best of the best, part of Yahweh's holy priesthood. And we can choose to have a high frequency with Yahweh. So each and every moment of every day, this is what we're proving to Yahweh, what kind of vessel we are. But we have to walk each day with the understanding that this is real. What we're doing, preparing for the kingdom, and the fact that we are Yahweh's, we are the city of Yisrael, this is real. And every moment, our lives are going straight to Yahweh. Everything, every thought, every word, every action, it's going straight to Yahweh. So no matter what is going on, Yahweh knows. And it's important to understand Yahweh does know, and it does matter to Yahweh what we're doing. So once we know that, Yahweh is looking at us, and we have to know the people we're supposed to be, we start acting accordingly. And then you will see yourself grow. In Exodus 19, 5 through 6, it says, you have seen what I have done to Egypt and how I carried you on wings of eagles and brought you to myself. Now therefore, if you will truly obey my voice by keeping my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. Notice verse 6, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the laws that you shall speak to the children of Israel. Yahweh said, you shall be to me a holy nation. And we know that we are the city of Yisrael, right? So Yahweh is forming us into this holy nation and to be a part of his 144,000 priesthood, Yahweh willing. So in the Two Witnesses book on page 222, there's an excerpt I wanted to read to you. It says, the seven lampstand represents the complete plan of Yahweh to bring forth a holy priesthood from his only prophesied established work, the house of Yahweh. This holy priesthood will serve in Yahweh's kingdom under Yahshua Messiah, the high priest over the house of Yahweh, and will have complete power and complete knowledge and understanding in order to rule the nations and bring them to peace through the knowledge of Yahweh. This is Yahweh's plan from the beginning, his plan which was shown to Moshe on the mountain. And we know in Exodus 25:40 it says, see that you make all things according to this pattern. That's how Yahweh is making us according to his pattern. So what other nation is so great? What other people is so great? To have their gods with them, the way that Yahweh is near us whenever we pray to him. As it says in Deuteronomy 4, verse 7 and 8. And what other nation is so great as to have such righteous statutes and judgments as are in this body of law, which Yahweh has set in front of us? And he said, only take heed to yourself and diligently keep yourself from forgetting the things your eyes have seen. It reminds me of that scripture that says, you know, pay attention to yourself and the doctrines. So in Deuteronomy 7, 6 and 7 and 8 and 9, it says, just a moment while I turn there. For you are a people holy to Yahweh your Father. Yahweh your Father has chosen you. He has chosen you to be a people for himself, a special treasure above all other peoples on the face of the earth. Yahweh did not set his love upon you or choose you because you are more numerous than any other people, for you are the fewest of all peoples. But because Yahweh loves you, and because he would keep the oath he vowed with uplifted hand to your fathers, to bring you out with a mighty hand and to redeem you from the house of bondage, from the hand of Pope Francis, from the hand of Pharaoh, I don't know what occurred. Know therefore that Yahweh is your father. He is mighty. He is the faithful father who keeps his covenant and mercy for 1,000 generations of those who love him and keep his laws. 1 Corinthians 3:16 through 17 says, do you not understand that you are the house of Yahweh and that spirit of Yahweh dwells in you? 1 Thessalonians 5:19 says, do not quench the spirit. The house of Yahweh is holy, which you are. So we are Yahweh, we are the house of Yahweh. And what manner of person ought this group of people in the city of Israel to be? 1 Corinthians 6:2 through 3 says, do you not know that the saints will judge the world? And if the world will be judged by you, then are you not competent to judge trivial matters? Do you not know that we will judge Malachim? How much more the things that pertain to this life? Or do you not know that your body is the sanctuary of spirit holy in you, which you have from Yahweh, and you are not your own? You were bought with a price. Therefore, glorify Yahweh in your spirit, in your body and in your spirit, which are Yahweh's. And in Deuteronomy 10, 12, and 13, if you want to turn there, it says, you know, basically, since we are the city of Israel, you know, this applies to us as well. It says, and now, O Israel, what does Yahweh your Father require of you? But to reverence Yahweh your Father by walking in all his ways, by loving him, by serving Yahweh with all your heart and with all your soul, by keeping the laws of Yahweh with his statutes, which I command you this day, so that you may be blessed, or so that you can be blessed. And with that, I'll turn it over to the next speaker.
You can be seated. So my title today is The Inheritance of the Sons and Daughters of Yahweh. And I want to start in Revelation chapter 21 and verse 7. It says, he who overcomes will inherit all things, and I will be his father, and he will be my son. Yahweh's plan from the beginning was to build a family of righteous beings like himself who will choose to strictly follow and pattern their lives after his righteous perfect laws without wavering. And we see this plan spoken of in Yochanan 1, verse 1 through 5 and verse 12. It says, in the beginning was the plan of Yahweh, and the plan was with Yahweh, and the plan was Yahweh's. The same plan was in the beginning with Yahweh. All things were done according to it, and without it, nothing was done that was done. And this plan was life, and that life was a light to mankind. That plan is to bring forth life. It's to save life. That is the foundation of what Yahweh's plan was made for. As Overseer said last time he spoke, he said, mankind was created so that we could bring life and not death, peace and not war. It says, now that light shines in the darkness, but the darkness does not take hold of it. And then down in verse 11, it says, he came to his own, but his own did not receive him. And remember his first original sons. And he says in verse 12, but as many as received him, which of course we know that means to yield in obedience to his laws, to those he gave authority to become the sons of Yahweh. And that authority is what we see spoken of in Genesis 1:26, where Yahweh says, I will make man in my image according to my likeness, and they will have authority over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over the cattle, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. But it says that he came to his own, but his own did not receive him. And we know that Yahweh's original sons and his wife, Satan, they rejected his righteousness. And Yahweh had set them over, as it says in Genesis 3:14, it says he established Satan over all living things. and he gave them the top-ranking governing positions in the universe, and they left their first estate, and then they turned to sin. And we see in Genesis 1, verse 1 through 2, the destruction that they caused on the earth and just the short amount of time that they had that their way on earth. And we can see that same suffering that they're bringing throughout all of the universe now. We know that the heavens, all the things that we see taking place on earth, the wars and the fighting, the sickness and the disease and the death, is also taking place in the heavens right now because it's being ruled by the same government. And in Romans 8, verse 19 through 23, we see what the job of the sons and daughters of Yahweh is. In verse 19, it says, "For the earnest expectation of the creation waits for the revealing of the sons of Yahweh. For the creation was made subject to emptiness," or to vanity. We are made subject to this vanity so that, unlike his first sons, we will be proven before, as the speaker said before. The speaker said previously that your people have proved themselves before they're given these positions. So we were made subject to that vanity so that we would have to be tested and we'd have to be tried and we have to overcome it to prove to Yahweh without a shadow of death that we'll never yield to that sin again. In verse 21, it says, "Because the creation itself will also be delivered from the bondage of corruption." And as Yeshua said, you know, this bondage is he who practices sin is the servant to sin. You become enslaved to the sin because of all of the curses and the sickness and the death that that sin brings. But this is our job, to deliver all creation from this bondage of sin into this glorious liberty by the children of Yahweh. And it says, "For we know that the whole creation has been groaning, as in the labor of childbirth, right up to the present time. And not only they, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the spirits, groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for the adoption, the redemption of our body." So we see that this is our job, and this is our inheritance. This is part of that authority that we talked about in Genesis 1:26 that is going to be given to us, that we will receive, that will put an end to all of the sin and all of the suffering and the defilement that is going on in the heavens and in the earth, and will bring in that everlasting righteousness, as it says in Daniel 9:24, that will forever guard and keep. In Ephesians 1, verse 4-5, it says, "Because he chose us with him," that is, Yahweh chose us with Yeshua, "before the foundations of the world, that we were to be holy and without blame before him in love, preordaining us to be his children by adoption through Yeshua Messiah, according to the righteous pleasure of his plan." And then down in verse 10, he says, "For the administration of his house," "for the administration of his house at the completed time, to gather together in unity to himself under one head, the Messiah, to manage both the things which are yet in the heavens and the things also for the earth in him, in whom we are also allotted an inheritance, being preordained as he set forth, as all things work according to the purpose of his plan." So as you see, the inheritance of the sons and daughters of Yahweh is a kingdom. It's an administration that will be trusted to be put over all the earth and the universe as the everlasting guides to peace, joy, and love. And we're going to take over the current administration that's currently ruling the governing the heavens and earth with force. And in Matthew 20, chapter 20, Yeshua talked about this. In Matthew 20, verse 25 through 26, he says, "But Yeshua summoned them and said, 'You know that the rulers of the Gentiles exercise control over them, and they who are greater still exercise authority over them.' But he says, 'But this must not be so among you. For whoever will be great among you, let him be your servant.'" The administration of Yahweh is based on service, not force. And I have a quote from the book of Israel, the 11th book of Israel, part 1, chapter 5, verse 89 through 96. Overseers reading in Ephesians 1, verse 10, and it says, "For the administration of his house." He says, this administration means this is what he set up under Jethro. The administration comes from the word administrator, and it means to serve. That's the first meaning of the word, to serve. To serve this administration that he's setting up here. Yeshua set the perfect example to serve as a slave. Serve one another. That's what we do in the house of Yahweh. He says, well, it means to serve, but it also means to manage, to direct. And of course, if you don't pay any attention to the director, then you're worthless to this administration. It says management. Management, that's what this administration means, the executive officials of a government. That is the government of Yahweh and so forth, their policies, captains over 50, captain over 100, captains over thousands, to manage, to conduct, direct, control, to furnish, dispense, give, and offer. It says the direction of affairs, government, supervision, command, see management. Those who direct affairs, directors, administrators, officers, supervisors, teachers, cooks, command, executive, floor sleepers, floor moppers, bathroom cleaners, message deliverers, those who pick up people and bring them to work. It says those who sweep the floor behind them after they walk into work and so forth. Well, that's the administration. Now, you're being called for this purpose. Now, that's the administration of it. And you're being trained for this administration or a position in this house of Yahweh as an administrator. And if you just look at all of those definitions, it plainly describes exactly what we're practicing right now in the house of Yahweh. We are already practicing this administration, and Yeshua is judging us based on how we conduct ourselves in this administration now to see if we will qualify to be part of this government that takes over the kingdoms of the earth. And I just encourage you to really think about that and think about how what we're proving, if we're proving ourselves worthy for this administration or not. And with that, I'll turn it over to the next speaker.
Shalom, please be seated. For those of you who don't know, that was my baby that just spoke. It's hard to come up right after that because now I'm emotional. But I just want to point out how awesome our young women who grew up here are and how it really shows the work of Yisrael Hawkins. We're getting to see what is produced from his work, and I think it's awesome. So to start my speech off, I would like to ask a question, and I would like for everyone to raise their hand if they have ever heard Yisrael Hawkins speak about the cafeteria. Everyone's hands up. Has anyone ever heard Yisrael Hawkins tear down the cafeteria? No. I have a few things that I brought with me that I want to share from the books of Yisrael that Pastor has said about the cafeteria. In the third book of Yisrael, chapter 20, verse 7, he says, lye soap makes your nails grow long, too. It looks like I need clippers really bad. It will make your fingernails grow long and pretty, men. After I looked at that den of iniquity in my sink, I said, I will go to my study and I will eat at the cafeteria later. That's what it's for anyway. Okay, my next one is the third book of Yisrael, chapter 13, verse 3. The cafeteria was made for your benefit and was put here for your benefit. It has very healthy, kosher food. The workers there are teamed up where they can do the cooking properly, much better than a single wife can do at home. I'm not saying I don't want your wives to cook for you. The cafeteria is made to help the wives. Praise Yahweh. Okay, my next one is the fifth book of Yisrael, chapter 9, verse 3. The cafeteria is a great blessing. They tell me the only thing wrong is people rush over there and swarm it to get food. They get a little behind, so be patient with them. You might offer your help. I think they're short-handed over there. My next one is the third book of Yisrael, chapter 5, verse 5. I saw this thing in the scriptures. I would never have opened a cafeteria or a restaurant if I hadn't seen it in the scriptures. I felt compassion for the wives, especially in some of the big families. This elder's wife said she worked 10 times harder before we got this restaurant, just trying to feed her family on the Sabbath day. It's a great thing. Yahweh is putting a beautiful thing together here. Okay. My next one is the third book of Yisrael, chapter 8, verse 5. Those who are speaking against this cafeteria, the apostles spoke of you when they said, you speak evil things you don't understand or know. You need to shut your mouth and stop letting everybody know you're a fool. And putting your foot in your mouth. People get their feet in their mouths, and then it's so hard to take them out and admit they were wrong. There again comes humbling yourself. The last one I want to share is the sixth book of Yisrael, chapter 16, verse 184. I don't want anything to occur that would cut down our workers. I want our cafeteria to go on serving the meals. I don't even want you to be without ice cream. I don't want you to be without meat. I remember the mistakes Moshe made before he brought the children of Israel out of Egypt, and it got a lot of people in trouble. They started crying, and they turned against Yahweh. Many of them turned to sin and died. I don't want that to occur in these last days, but I can't do it all myself. I think that just these little few ones that I used as examples, there's 16 pages of in the Yisrael Says of Overseer talking about the cafeteria, but it shows that he is over the cafeteria. Every rule set at the cafeteria, every procedure made at the cafeteria comes from Overseer. We at the cafeteria, I think it's like one of the most humbling experiences to work at the cafeteria because we know we're there for all of you. We're there to serve all of you. We're there to help your day easier, day go easier. We're here to help you have something to eat so that your work doesn't have to stop. That is a very humbling thing. It's an awesome, awesome opportunity to work at the cafeteria to be able to serve you. And I think about that, and I think about that's just the same as every other work area. The South Office is there to serve all of us with everything that we need. Same with the people who mow the lawns. They're serving us. We're extremely excited when they come and do it. I mean, every single area in the work is governed perfectly for service for everyone. We have to remember that in this house, it is governed by Yisrael Hawkins. This is the city of Yisrael, and it is governed by Yisrael Hawkins. And it is perfect. Yahweh doesn't allow anything to take place in this city that he doesn't want to take place. And we have to keep that in mind. Every time we have a bad thought or a bad feeling about anything, we have to keep in mind that Yisrael Hawkins has all of this under control. I'm running out of time, but I wanted to share a gematria that I did, which is really awesome to me. I was so excited. It says, the lamplight cafeteria in the city of Yisrael. And I looked up Hebrew 24:54, and it means, are you ready? It's exciting. Wisdom, every wise woman. That is super awesome. And the cafeteria is a wonderful place, and Yahweh has really blessed Overseer with all of the things, all of the tools that he needs to look into situations and to know what decision to make for everything. He knows what he's doing, and we have to trust in that. Yahweh bless you all. I turn it over to the next speaker.
Shalom, everyone. Please be seated. Yahweh's peace be with each and every one of you. The title of my speech today is, With All That You Have Been Through, Continue Doing Righteousness. In Matithiah 19, verse 16 and 17, we see where a man came up to Yeshua while he was teaching and asked, Teacher, what righteous thing can I do so that I can enter life? But he said to him, "Why do you question me about righteousness? There is only one who is the standard of perfection. That is Yahweh. So if you will enter into life, keep the laws of Yahweh." In Deuteronomy 10, verse 12, Yahweh shows us his standard. He shows us what he requires of us. "And now, O Israel, what does Yahweh your father require of you but to reverence Yahweh your father by walking in all his ways, by loving him, by serving Yahweh your father with all your heart, with all your soul, by keeping the laws of Yahweh with his statutes, and which I command you this day, so that you may be blessed? Heaven and the highest heaven and the earth with all that is in it truly belongs to Yahweh your father. Yet Yahweh delighted only in your fathers to love them. He chose their descendants after them, you, each and every one of you, above all other people, as it is this day. Therefore, do not be stiff-necked any longer, for Yahweh your father is the King of kings and ruler of rulers, the great power, the mighty and wonderful. He is mighty and wonderful, who shows no partiality to persons. This is the standard of Yahweh, remember, not taking bribes. He executes judgment for the fatherless and the widow and loves the stranger, giving him food," which, as we just heard from our great speaker before, we were getting this awesome food from the cafeteria, and for free, by the way. "And he gives us clothing. And we have been granted this feast, the opportunity to be clothed by Yahweh in the fine linen." Thank you, Yahweh. It goes on to say, "And you are to love," "you shall revere Yahweh your father and serve him, hold fast to him and take oaths with his name. He is your praise. He is your father who has done these great and awesome things. Your own eyes have seen." Yes, our own eyes have seen. And let us continue to dwell on the great and awesome things that Yahweh has done for us by bringing us to this point that we are learning to only put forth the frequency of righteousness. Remember, it will be our righteousness if we observe and do all that is written in this book. In the Merriam-Webster's dictionary, the word observe means to fulfill, perform, or take part in. Do means to an act, make progress, bring to pass, and carry out. In Galatians 6, verse 9 and 10, it says, "And let us not grow weary of doing righteousness, for in due time we will reap, if we do not faint, if we endure to the end. Therefore, as the opportunity arises, let us do righteousness to all, especially to the members of the faith, of the family of the faith, the house of Yahweh." Like we have heard many times this feast, that our service to one another should be without complaint of what's going wrong or with an offensive attitude. But as Pastor, our greatest teacher in the world, said, let us consider one another. Let us consider one another's feelings. We are making progress, though, in our doing and performing of the laws and enduring with all that we have been through and the act of growing through our tests and trials. In Jacob 1, verse 25, it says, "But he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and perseveres, continues persistently in it, he is not being a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work." Side note, F for that word work is the law. "This man will be blessed in his performance of the law." I spoke before about the work that Yahweh is doing in each of us when we go through some of our toughest tests, and we think to ourselves, "I can't believe I'm going through this." Remember, it is for the building of our character. This is our opportunity to put into action all that we've been taught, to work towards reaping the reward. Remember, let endurance have its perfect work, so that you may become perfect lacking nothing. In Hebrews 10, verse 36, it says, "For you have need of endurance, so that after you have done the will of Yahweh, you may receive the promise." So now we are here at the city of Israel, dressed in our fine linen, which represents the righteousness of the saints, and all that we're learning about frequency, and Pastor's awesome teachings about Jupiter, and the amazing information that we're receiving, and knowing that there's frequencies going out from Jupiter, let's put forth all the more effort to send our frequency of righteousness out. Because as it says in Psalms 11, verse 7, "For Yahweh is righteous, he loves righteousness, and he loves righteousness from his own." And at this time, I'd like to present the next speaker.
Shalom, you can be seated. So whenever I was sitting down to collect all my thoughts, I sat down and then the power went out. And I was like, oh, man. So long story short, I was, the breaker went out and I was flipping it back on, trying to, and it wouldn't come back on. So I texted the South office and less than 20 minutes later, the guy was there fixing it. So the city of Israel is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and there's no job we can't do, and there's a job for you. So basic knowledge quiz. Okay, so don't think too hard because these are easy. It's not about me, it's about the... And the work is our... Yahweh said, let there be... And the power's back on. So when I say three, shout out your volunteer area. 1, 2, 3. Okay, so there was some nice variety, and I did hear cafeteria people, but I thought you all were going to be over there cooking our lunch. So that just throws that part of it off. So I think about the kingdom and Yahweh Shema and the restaurant I'll have there called Cheeseburger Shema that's right across the street from Her Wings and Rings, and that I hope to be on the Reef Restoration crew, and I'll have a bear friend named Stan, and I could go on and on. And if you think it's weird for me to think about this stuff, Philippians 4:8 says that I can. And 1 Corinthians 2:9 says, "Eye has not seen, nor ear heard, neither have entered into the mind of man the things which Yahweh has prepared for those who love him." So if my little brain can imagine these things, what magnificent thing has it not yet? So Yahweh Shema sometimes is like this huge, seemingly unreachable place. So Yahweh, as he does, prepares us for what's to come. With the city of Israel, we don't have to stretch our imagination so far because we've been a functional society for some time now. Society from dictionary.com is an organized group of persons associated together for religious, benevolent, cultural, scientific, or political purposes. And I like this one here. It says, "A highly structured system of human organization for large-scale community living that normally furnishes protection, continuity, which indicates stability, and security for its members." And we are the community members of the city of Israel, and it takes all of us doing our part. So a mighty priest asked us the other day, "Who are you?" So I ask, "Where is your place?" The day before I came to my first Sabbath at the house of Yahweh, the best thing that anyone had told me up until that point in my life was, "When you get there, ask for a job." So I went to services and I ate lunch, and then I went to the lady that took my order, and she directed me to the supervisor at the cafeteria. And I'm still there almost 10 years later. So here's the real part I want to get to. Boredom. Dun, dun, dun. Boredom is to weary by dullness, tedious repetition, related words are exhausted, irritate, yawn, bummer. At the Brush Arbor the other day, a great Kohana said, "We can't stay stagnant." Okay, we can't allow ourselves to get bored. We all do sometimes know. A dear friend of mine said, boredom is an unwillingness to educate yourself. It's an unwillingness to apply our minds. In some situations, with some jobs, in some environments, we have to apply our minds even more. Basic knowledge quiz again. The law is our best friend. Yahweh is our rock, strength, okay? Find your
place.
No. Well, yes, but find your blank in Yahweh. Joy, thank you. Find your joy. Find. You got to look for it. Sometimes it's harder than finding your keys on a Sabbath morning when you're already almost late for duty. So if you don't have a job, get one. What are you waiting for? What's holding you back? I know you see us all running around like ants before winter. There's a place for everyone in the city of Israel. Don't become irritated with the repetitive jobs. Look at the big picture. Find your joy. It's there. I heard about a guy that when he would chop wood, he'd swing it and go, woo, every time. And so I know that some people have gotten to chop wood. It's tiresome. It's a bummer. But he made it fun. We have to make things fun and exciting and joyful. And then we're also a joy for others to be around. This is our city, a community of dedicated workers that will benefit the entire vast universe. Where is your place, and how much are you willing to apply your mind to not grow weary? So that we can see and hear and taste and smell and feel all the magnificent things that our mind can't even comprehend. So if you've searched and searched for your joy but can't seem to find it, here's what you do. Ask it, Abel. There might be some extracurricular activity, as I like to call them, that you can get involved with, minus filming. But what are you interested in? What talent might you have that is dormant, just waiting for some sunshine and water so it can spring forth? It never hurts to ask, and being told no will not be the death of you. So I hope I've given you some lovely things to think on. Now please stand and welcome one of our finest sticker pickers.
Shalom, everyone. Please be seated. My topic today is love in the city of Israel, Texas. I would like everyone to please turn over to 1 Corinthians 13, verses 1 through 8. And it reads, though I speak with the languages of men and of Malkin, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all deep secrets and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I can remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my possessions to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not love, it is no advantage to me. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is jealous. It's not boastful. It's not puffed up with pride. Does not behave rudely. Does not seek its own advantage. Is not provoked. Become worked up in irritation. Thinks no evil. Does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Does not betray. Believes all things. Hope all things. Endure all things. Love never fails. There are 3 points I would like to cover from this chapter. 1, love is patient. Having patience is the ability to wait without becoming anxious or annoyed. Instead of being hasty and impulsive, it is the ability to remain calm. More so, being patient is having understanding for a person or situation, and it's being able to endure even through pain or provocation. I think one of the main reasons we become impatient with others is because we expect them to have achieved a certain level of spirituality, spiritual maturity. When someone sin or fail, we tend to think, like, shouldn't they be past this by now? And they even more mature? Reality is, true spiritual growth is very slow and takes a long time. I want you to compare this in your mind to teaching a child their ABCs. You have a card in your hand. You said to the child, this is a D. They turn to you and they say, no, it's a Q. You said, no, it's a D. They look at you again and say, no, it's a Q. And so what do? You move on, and later you revisit again, and eventually you'll get it. Our expectations in our mind is that they should grasp it right there and then. They ought to know it right there. I'm a mother, I know. I had to teach my daughter, and when she didn't get something, I would get very impatient because I expect her to understand it fully. But what we fail to realize is that we need to be patient and continually teach, guide. And not only that, but to be supportive, very supportive. Because I know most of you see when people go up to give like speeches, they will be like, I would like to thank my parents for being there with me, who has supported me throughout the tough times. And that is what we ought to be to each other, a support, a guide. Now, I did not say nag. I say a support, a guide. Teach, take each one hand and walk with each other through their walk. So just as a kid, so is with us. Sometimes it takes an individual years to overcome a particular struggle or a pattern of sin. I honestly believe when we recognize this in all sincerity of heart, as a group, as a body, we will be patient towards others. I want you to keep in mind how patient Yahweh is towards us in our walk with Him. Now consider how we ought to be with each other. If you'll turn over to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 14, it reads, now we exhort you, brothers, warn those who are unruly, not keeping in ranks, out of order among you, comfort the downhearted, support the weak, and be patient toward all. My second point is, love is not evil. Love thinks no evil. Love thinks no evil. No matter how many times I say it, it will always be the same. Love thinks no evil. The word evil is word 7451 in the Strong's, and it means bad, calamity, displease, great grief. Therefore, how can Yahweh's laws be categorized with evil? From the above meaning, we can see Yahweh's laws is designed to bring joy, peace, and abundant living to all. That is why it is so important to consider the way we deal with each other, whether it be in actions or thought. Sometimes we might be wronged by someone, or sometimes ourselves, we wrong each other. I'll tell you what, repaying evil for evil only makes us guilty of the same exact thing that they did to us. Remember, love is the law, repels the presence of evil. It should make us want to change when we look upon all the evil in the world today. It should make us want to change. This desire for the absence of evil should be the purpose of having the laws of Yahweh in our heart. Not just having it. It's enough to say that we have it, but if we're not applying it, it is nothing to us. Keep in mind, Yeshua, despite all that he went through, all the evil that was done to him, he didn't repay evil with evil. Love thinks no evil. That is something we should always keep in the forefront of our mind. Last but not least, love never fails. Yahweh's laws never fails. Everything that I mentioned are the guidance on how we ought to deal with each other. So I'm going to read over 1 Corinthians 13, verses 1 through 8. And I want you to really read it and understand it. Though I speak with the languages of men and of Malkin, but have not the law, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all deep secrets and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I can remove mountains, but have not the law, or do not know how to apply the law, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my possessions to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not love, it is no advantage to me. Love is patient and is kind. Love is jealous. Love is not boastful. It's not puffed up with pride. Does not behave rudely. Does not seek its own advantage. Is not provoked. Become worked up in irritation. Thinks no evil. Does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Does not betray. Believes all things. Hope all things. Endures all things. Love never fails. When we keep this in mind, I'll tell you what. The love for the house of Yahweh, the love for the people of the house of Yahweh, the love for the character of the people of the house of Yahweh should never fail within us. For these are the love, and without them we are nothing. Because upon this love, the city of Israel will be built. Yes, it is a city built upon love. And with this, I'd like to turn it over to the next speaker.
Shalom, saints of Yahweh. Please be seated. My title this morning is Flip That Coin. Now, anyone who's heard anything coming from the house of Yahweh in the last 6 months should know that we are in the last 3.5 years before the end of Satan's kingdom. That should be really exciting for all of us because it means that Yahweh's kingdom will be here. But I think sometimes we get caught up in the things that we're going through and we're not focused on what's coming. 2 Thessalonians 2:9 tells us that Yahshua's coming is according to the energy of Satan, who works with all power and signs and lying wonders. How many of you feel like Satan has turned her energy up to maximum power lately? That alone should tell you that these prophecies are true. I've seen what some of you have been going through, and I have my own tests as well. And I thought long and hard about what I could say today that might encourage you to stand strong and endure no matter what, because that's what it takes, endurance. I finally decided to talk about polarity. When Yahweh created the universe, he set things in order to work a certain way, and scientists have tried to quantify these things. They call them the laws of physics, physical laws that do not change. We've recently seen demonstrations of the electromagnetic fields and how the magnetic poles work. There's a positive and a negative pole. That's where the principle they call the law of polarity gets its name. And the premise is that everything has an opposite, and they both exist at the same time. It's also sometimes called the law of opposites. You have positive and negative, up and down, left and right, and you can't have one without the other. Inside, outside, righteousness versus sin. Everything has an opposite. Those that the world considers great men really can't agree on much, but they do seem to agree on one thing. You become what you think about most of the time. They say it in different ways, but many of them have said it. Now, these men learn to harness their thoughts just enough to achieve their goals in life. Our goals are much higher. They require a deeper level of control. But our great teacher, Israel Hawkins, has broken it down for us because our thoughts lead to feelings, which lead to actions, which lead to rewards or consequences. I think we tend to think of the rewards and consequences as tangible things, such as a child getting a special treat for great behavior or losing a privilege if they misbehave or disobey. But they're often intangible and more long-term. We don't always see the results of our thought patterns immediately. But if you look at your life and you think back, you will be able to see that everything you're going through right now, great or bad, is a result of choices you made in the past. And those choices began with thoughts, and often with a single decision. Sometimes we're not even aware at the time that we're making the decisions that determine our paths in life. We can sabotage our own plans if we're not careful. Proverbs 4:23 says, "Guard your mind with all diligence, for out of it flows the springs of life." Now, what has that got to do with polarity or opposites? Well, I think of it like two sides of a coin. You're looking at one side or the other, and what you're focused on and thinking about will determine your outcome. If you're cold and you just keep thinking about how cold you are, you're never going to get warm. You have to flip the coin over and start thinking about warmth and change your circumstance. Our tests are the same way. We recognize that we're being tested, but are we looking at that as a negative or a positive? I guarantee you that if Yahweh didn't have a purpose for you and a place for you reserved in his kingdom, you wouldn't need to be tested. And to whom much is given, much is required of them. So it stands to reason that you'd need to be tested more, right? Through some of the hardest tests I've had, I've reminded myself that I must be doing something right, or Satan wouldn't even bother testing me. It would be a waste of time. And we all know 1 Corinthians 10:13, where Yahweh promised us we'll never be tempted beyond what we can bear. So when the tests feel overwhelming, remember that Yahweh knows your limits, and you are stronger than you think you are. Romans 8:28 says, "And we know that all things work together for righteousness to those who love Yahweh, to those who are the called out according to his plan." Yahweh doesn't lie. All things are working together for righteousness for you and me. I want to challenge you, sisters, when your test is staring you in the face, look at it for what it is, then find the positive in it. We can't always immediately see it, but it's always there. If things are really bad, then the other side of the coin is a really great blessing, and we need to find it. I've been doing this for a while, and I can tell you that it works. Sometimes it just takes a while to recognize that blessing. Last week, I heard someone say, "If you're stressed, you have the wrong mindset." And I thought to myself, that's so true. And I actually was stressed at that moment, but when I heard that statement, my stress melted away. It really doesn't pay to be stressed. It doesn't help anything, and we either can't do anything about the situation and so need to just wait on Yahweh, or there's a definite action we can take, and so that means we just need to get moving. Once I really understood about polarity and opposites, I finally understood the deeper meaning of what Pastor put in the Peaceful Solution about changing negative thoughts into positive. It seems like everything that he teaches us has two levels, milk and meat, a simple meaning and a deeper meaning. Psalm 27, verses 1 through 6 and 13 through 14 says, "Yahweh is our light. You are our salvation. Yahweh is the strength of our life. In whom shall we fear? Shall we be afraid? When our foes came against us to eat our flesh, they stumbled back. Our enemies stumbled and fell. Our hearts shall have no fear, though a host should camp against us. Though war should arise against us, we are confident in this. One thing we desired of Yahweh that we will seek after all the days of our life, that we may dwell in the house of Yahweh to see your beauty and to inquire of you in your sanctuary." Jeremiah 29:11 says, "For I know the thoughts that I have for you, says Yahweh, thoughts of peace and not of destruction, to give you the future you hope for." Whatever you're going through, no matter how intense it is, there's an equally intense opposite. If you're having trouble flipping the coin over, ask your counselors for help. Sometimes an outside point of view can see the other side of the coin and point it out to us. If nothing else, keep reminding yourself that Yahweh's in full control. We only see part of the situation, the part we're actively involved in. But sometimes Yahweh's working far outside of that small part we see, and we won't even know until the situation is resolved how in control he really was. If we really believe Yahweh's in full control, then we need to trust that he'll always look out for our best interests. Deuteronomy 4:4-7 says, "But you who held fast to Yahweh your father are alive, every one of you this day. See, I have taught you statutes and judgments, just as my father commanded me, so that you may follow them in the land you're entering to take possession of, this great city of Israel." I'd like to turn it over to the next speaker.
Shalom, everyone. You can all be seated. I'm going to start off on page 156 in the book of Yahweh. And that's Deuteronomy 10:14. It says heaven and the highest heavens and the earth with all that is in it truly belongs to Yahweh, your Father. Yahweh owns everything. He owns it all. The title of my speech, Yahweh, he submits. Yahweh also has a head. Did y'all know that? Yahweh has a head. Now, I don't mean the eyes, the nose, and the mouth. He has a head. And to get right into what it is, since I only have 9 minutes, oh, I hear somebody shouting it out. I would like to read out of the second book of Israel, going on to perfection, page 333, paragraph 3. Brethren, and this is the words of the last day's witness, it's beautiful once you understand the plan of Yahweh and what he's doing. Then you see what he has prophesied. He gives you the details of what we're going through even today. These are things he suffered himself. Yahweh suffers. I remember before the overseer said Yahweh even gave himself a toothache. So next time you have a bad tooth, just understand Yahweh knows how it feels. He's aware. He know how cavities hurt. I don't know why he gave himself a cavity, but he likes to, I mean, he experienced things. Like he's not, it's not unknown to him. From a backache, a toothache, a headache. He's aware of all things. He said, these are things he suffered himself because of righteousness. Yahweh submits to his own laws. They are his head. That's all he asks us to do. Submit to the same head that he submits to. And believe it or not, Yahweh did teach his wife. He taught his wife to submit to the same authority he submits to, the laws of Yahweh. Now, in the book of Yahweh, on page 813, I'm going to read a side note in Luke. This doesn't give us an idea of Yahweh, a visual. On the side note, is side note C. The overseer has, Yeshua was made a spirit being, yet he has flesh and bone. And it says, 1 Corinthians 15:45, the last Adam, he is the image of the Father. Now, listen to this. If you want to have an image of Yahweh, Yahweh is not a God. And we were trained out there. That's why when I hear other people come up and they teach about coming against the overseer, you know what that really is? It's us not wanting to let go of the teachings of the devil. It's only two we get taught from, the devil, which is the wife of Yahweh, who taught us out there, or Yahweh. There's no, well, I was thinking last night, and the Strong's Concordance had this said under this number, and it wasn't mentioned. That's the teachings from the devil. Well, when I was in college there, you have it, Nimrod Institute of Higher Learning. We need to drop all of that. Drop it. And focus only on what the chosen branch is teaching us. Now, here's something about Yahweh. Yahweh is indeed a spirit being. Yes, we know he's a spirit being. But he is also flesh. Oh, did we know that? He's also flesh, bone, hair, and nails. Yes. Yahweh has a waist. He has knees. He has ankles. Yahweh keeps his law. Yahweh dressed modestly. And let me tell you, share with you something that I learned this morning. I was thinking about the resurrection, and I was talking to the great Kohanah Kayit, and I asked her, I said, do you think the resurrection is only for mankind? We only going to resurrect one another? Or is that for the beings, the ones in the heavens, the other creation? Are we going to be resurrecting them also? We didn't have the answer. So praise Father Yahweh for the one set who has the answer. And I was excited, and he said this. He said that's only for man. It's only for mankind. It's only for us to resurrect each other. We're going to resurrect the saints from old. And when that's done and we have our period and moment, we're going to resurrect the other mankind who died. So I was like, so you're telling me that's only for us? We're not going to go and resurrect the ones who died in that huge, huge universe of Jupiter? No. And I was like, wow, it's only for us? He said, yes. This is why we are hated. Who is man that you are mindful of? That's why she asked the question. Why did you give them that ability and we don't have it? Who is man that your flesh and their flesh? You're going to turn them into spirit beings just like yourself. I'm making man in my image and in my likeness. This is, I'm still thinking about what he said. I'm like, wow. I used to think that I can't wait till the Yahweh Shema to learn about the universe. When the Lord started talking about it, I was like, thank you, Father Yahweh. I ain't have to wait till Yahweh Shema. I'm so amazed about it's not even the planet Jupiter. And we have to learn that nonsense in school. My very great mother just served us nine pickles to learn the different planets. Meanwhile, they're not planets. And I was like, I'm so amazed. And I'm like, tell us some more. What's going on Pluto? What's going on Saturn? And I want to know it all. And this is only the outskirt of the Milky Way. Since I'm down to 3 minutes, thank you. Let me move on. And remember, Yahweh doesn't want us to doubt. A quick story, when there was a man in scriptures on page 804, Luke 18. He grew up in the house of Yahweh. He was very to recite the laws. You should not murder, you should not commit adultery. You know, you keep the Sabbath. But Yeshua told him, you lack one. You don't pay your tithes, your first, your second, your third tithes. You don't pay it because the guy doubted it. He don't believe it. When we don't do something that we are taught, this is Yahweh's head now, the laws. He pays first, second, and third tithes. He owns everything, but he's still giving. This man couldn't do that. He doubted. Yahweh does not doubt. He respects his head. He's very humble. Now, in a sermon, it was in 2005 on 8/20. You can hear it on Google Play, or if you have an iPhone, it's the podcast for Apple. Type in House of Yahweh. The overseer said, the beings in the universe, they are waiting for us. They were given permission to scrutinize us. They're watching us very closely. You know why? Because they are aware we are going to be sent to where they at to help them. But if we don't treat our neighbors here on earth the way we are instructed, they are our neighbors as well. We are neighboring universes or neighboring planets, not just the person in the trailer next to you or the house next to you. It's they are our neighbors. So if I'm not treating my neighbor as myself on this planet, it's them who would say, Yahweh, I don't want her. You see how she's treating that person right there? He's not going to force us on their, he's not going to force the entry. It's them. They are paying close attention to us right now. I mean, they're really watching. I would want that too. You let somebody in your house you don't know. Like, who that? She going to come in here and steal. You know, she going to take my child. And everything that's occurring on earth is occurring on their planets. There's not going to be anything that they're going to tell us that we don't know. And there's the stop sign. There's not going to be anything they don't tell us that we're not aware of. We are going to be able to encourage them. We are going to be able to lift them up. We are going to be able to implement back on in their planets, in their life, the law of Yahweh. Every city, we have the law. The city of Yeshua, the city of Abraham, the city of Isaac, the city of Israel, all the foundation, the heart is the law of Yahweh. And with this, I'll turn it over to the next speaker.
Shalom. Please be seated. My title today is, Are You Willing to Sing This Song? Children, I'm going to need your help. Okay, get ready. There was a time period when the music had stopped in Yahweh's house. Pastor told us he hated worldly music, and he wanted to just stop music altogether. Some of you probably remember that time. The reason he said this was because Satan had used music as a tool to influence people to sin. It actually caused sin, listening to worldly music. Our teacher has always had the goal of us getting all sin out of our lives so we could become perfect, right? And so we stopped singing for a time period, and it was quite a lengthy time period. But our overseer knows that he didn't, you know, it shouldn't go away forever, right?
And he wanted to produce music that would only bring glory and honor to Father Yahweh. So, at Passover in 2011, our great teacher reintroduced music to Yahweh's house with a very special song. Many of you might remember. It was called The Song of Yisrael to Yahweh and Yahshua. And children, I need your help, remember? And children is anyone from 0 to 99, just in case you weren't aware, okay? So let's put the words up on the screen for you all. This is the Song of Yisrael to Yahweh and Yahshua. Ready? One, two, three. Yahweh, we love your great commandments. We seek peace within that way, coupled with love for thy neighbor. We seek peace, perfect peace, eternally. Great job. Give yourselves a hand. So you remember that time, right? In Deuteronomy 18:18, it says, Yahweh wrote, I will raise up for them a prophet like you from among their brothers, and I will put my words in his mouth, and he will tell them everything I command them, command him. So, you see, just like the countless prophetic words, newsletters, and numerous books the overseer has written, the songs Yisrael Hawkins writes are truly inspired words of Yahweh, everything that comes from his mouth. And his latest song is no different, and it's so beautiful. It's called The Salvation, and it's on the new song CD, which we're all eagerly anticipating, I know. And very soon, you're going to be able to go to the men's and women's office, South offices to get your copy. So keep asking them, and really soon, I know you're going to see those CDs pop up, and you're going to get to hear Pastor's song. This song has been, the whole CD actually has been completely produced by Yahweh's house from start to finish. And that's what he wanted, sisters, and we're doing it here in Yahweh's house now. It's not worldly. There's nothing unrighteous about it. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful work. And Pastor's goal, his goal was to give Yahweh's holy people of new righteous music. And now we're doing it, and we can be influenced in totally righteous ways. And I don't have time to play this song today for you, but I wanted to focus on the words coming up on your screen now. Okay, this is the chorus of the song. And you should see this song. Okay? Learning war no more is the everlasting power. Bringing everlasting days is Yahweh's perfect, peaceful way. Bound with unity with our great high priest Yahshua, the choice is yours to make in these last great days. Now, I want you to notice the similarity in these two songs that we just went over. The first one he wrote, and now this last one he wrote for our learning and overcoming, they both mention perfect peace and coming into unity with our neighbors. They also both talk about how to live for eternity. Pastor is still singing the same song, sisters. Can you see it? Hopefully, by the end of this speech, you will. Let's look at the words to the salvation song again. Please show the chorus again, okay? It caught my attention that Pastor used the words everlasting two times in this chorus. I looked up everlasting in Yisrael Hawkins, or Yisrael Says program, and found it in the first book of Yisrael, chapter 20, verse 57. I don't have a slide for this. I just wanted to tell you, though, what it means. So if you can see this, the chorus on the screen again. Pastor, he's reading from Daniel 9:24, and it says, let's turn to that scripture, okay? And that scripture 9:24, you turn to it 9:24, And I'm going to read it to you. 70 weeks are determined upon your people and upon your holy city to finish transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in, what? Everlasting righteousness. To seal up the vision and prophecy and to anoint the holiest of the holy people. In chapter 20 of the first book of Israel, when Pastor was reading this, he said everlasting righteousness means everlasting keeping Yahweh's laws. Everlasting, forever, right? We will be doing this for all eternity, keeping Yahweh's perfect laws of peace. Now, back to the course of the song, it says, bound with unity with our great high priest Yahshua. In Psalm 110, verse 3, you can put that down in your notes, it talks about the prophecy of Yahshua and how we would be bound in unity with him. And we have to come in unity with him. So you can read that in your own time. Psalm 110, verse 3. And then in the 12th book of Israel, part 1, chapter 13, verse 35, Pastor says, truly I say to you, when the seed of the donkey, you know, why would they leave such an important word of the scripture out? But the greatest of the world's authorities said they left it out. When the seed of the donkeys are bound to the branch, you get that? When the seed of the donkeys are bound to the branch. Now, he's giving you a prophecy here, and no one can learn this song. Oh, no one can learn this song. I guarantee you that no one can learn this song except those that are called to his house. And that's where you learn the song. The song is preparing you to walk in Yahshua's steps, just like Yahweh himself, to be just like Yahweh himself. Are we learning this song, sisters? Yahweh and Yahshua and Yisrael will know by our actions and by our frequencies we give off. As we have been learning, you know, this whole feast about how amazing it is, about the linen that, you know, this is a song. We're learning. Also, for your notes, let's see here. Okay, we'll go back to the chorus. It says, war no more. War no more reminds me of Stop All Wars, right? And you can write down the Mark of the Beast, Volume 2, for your notes, chapter 13, verses 315 to 317 in the Yishol Says program. And I'm just going to read verse 316. It says, to bring the nations under control, to stop all wars. Now, this is what we're going to be doing forever, sisters, to maintain peace, to teach each person alive the laws of Yahweh, to enforce those laws, to bring the earth back to full productivity. This will take a lot of people working a lot of hours. How many of you feel like you've been working a lot of hours this feast, right? Yes, all of you. I've seen it. I've seen it coming together. This then brings us the reward of those who overcome sin. Overcome sin. Can we sing this song, sisters? You know what the song is yet? Well, I'll tell you. I know some people think they can't sing, but the song our overseer has been teaching us is learnable, okay? The song we need to sing is not about voices, it's about choices. It's not about singing, it's about bringing forth righteousness. You can do this, we can do this, we can sing this song. In the 12th book of Israel, part 1, chapter 13, verse 120, it says, remember the scripture? And they sang, as it were, a new song before the throne of Yahweh. And Pastor says, and no man could learn that song. Why couldn't anybody learn the song? You've got to learn righteousness. That's what the song is. It's righteousness. Again, it's not about voices. It's about choices. It's not about singing. It's about bringing forth righteousness, sisters. We all are being given an opportunity in these last days to learn this song. And I know we are learning it. I know we can learn it. We have a choice to use our voice for everlasting righteousness. But it starts now. and we will be in Yahweh's kingdom forever. We have to learn this song and be singing it in order to be granted permission to be at that marriage supper with our high priest and our great teacher, Yisroel Hawkins. And Pastor has been singing the same song since he and his brother Yaakov established this work in these last days. What song are we singing? I'm asking you, are you willing to sing? Remember, it's not about voices, it's about choices, and it's not about singing. It's about bringing forth righteousness. And now I would like to turn it over, if you all please stand, for another great singer in Yahweh's house, a great Kohana. Please stand.
Shalom, everyone. Please be seated. In, I think it was 1992, there was a famine in Somalia. And the images shown, I had never seen anything like it. The title of my speech today is Yisroel City Gives Life. And this city that we're in, the great house of Yahweh, is the only place on the earth that gives life. I know a lot of people, like, they want to travel and go different places, but this is the only place that gives life. And it's going to feed the rest of the earth. In Matthew 24, it says that nation will rise against nation. And the famine in 1992 was just that. It was nation against nation, kingdom against kingdom. And Yeshua tells us that these famines are coming again. I'm shaky because these images are very graphic and very disturbing. So I need for you to have that in mind. If we can play the video.
Civilization had completely broken down. And I realized my most effective contribution would be to make images and try and keep the idea alive that this famine was not over.
Somalia has been in a state of anarchy since January last year. The famine is regarded by food agencies as more critical than that which faced Ethiopia in 1984. War has compounded the problem.
It's very important to understand that the famine in Somalia was caused by war. There had been droughts, but Somalis had lived through many droughts. There was clan warfare raging. It had become a completely lawless part of the world. Hunger was being used as a weapon of mass destruction. Hunger was being used as a weapon of mass destruction.
Let me tell you, I got into the first and only fight with my father over that. It was so bad, and I remember it because he had never yelled at me before. My mother had yelled at me many times, but my father had never yelled at me before, and it shocked my mind. He walked into my house, and I think he just came to say hello or greet me. And I mean, it was not pretty. because in my mind I thought, how in the world is this, how is this allowed? Well, I was so upset, the poor photographer. I'm like, how is the man, does he have time to take the pictures? Why aren't we doing something? Why isn't anyone doing anything? And then I started fussing at him, yelling at him, because I thought, what father sends their children into war? They can't provide for them. Their babies with flies all over them. I was so angry. And I was not ready for what he said after. Are you ready? Because I was not ready. Let me tell you what he said. This is how he said it too. He was 6'5", so I had to look up. He said to me, who do you think you are? He said, who are you? Who are you? And I'm, you know, now I'm like, I'm nobody. I'm nothing. I'm nobody. He didn't defend himself. He didn't defend what was going on. These are some of the wisest words that he said to me. Parents, don't ever take for granted that what you're saying to your children, it doesn't penetrate them. Keep encouraging, keep talking. He told me that day, he said, it is not you who decides who lives and who dies. It is the creator of heaven and earth who gives life. Period. And he sat down. And I thought, what? Who can argue with that? I have nothing else to say. The creator of heaven and earth gives life. So why are you in the city of Israel? Because out there is what is predicted for mankind. This is the only place that the opportunity is given for life. Now, 6 or 7, maybe I was about 17 at that time when he had to rough me up. About maybe 7 years later, he died. And you know how people don't tell children everything. You have to figure out when you get an adult. That's kind of how my family was. Well, I found out the truth, why he said what he said. And I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked. The man that told me it is Yahweh that gives life, he was actually a baby who was placed in a box, a shoe box. And he was put in a dumpster. And when they found him, I think it was a green onesie that he had on, was covered in maggots on Rideout Street in downtown Annapolis. And by the time he was 7 years old, infection had eaten his body so badly that he ended up losing his kidney. And I always remember seeing this long scar down his back. And I guess, you know, he sweat a lot, so that's why I guess I inherited that. And it gave me understanding to what he really was telling me. It's Yahweh who gives life, and we're not going to take that for granted. In our city, we're not going to throw away our babies and have babies that we don't care for. We're going to guard ourselves against sin, and we're going to conduct ourselves honorably before our Father. And my father, he never spoke a bad word about his mother. I never heard it. out of all of that, I never heard it. So we're going to show honor to our mother, the great house of Yahweh, and honor to our father, because it is our father Yahweh who gives life. And with that, I'll turn it over to the next speaker.
Shalom. Please be seated. I love the Day of Atonement. Don't y'all? It's the best day of the year. We get to fast, drink no water, eat no food. We get closer to Yahweh. But you know, Yahweh is just so smart. Not only do we cleanse spiritually, we cleanse physically. We do a dry fast. A dry fast is where you drink no water, eat no food. There's a hard dry fast, and on that one, they don't take a shower or brush their teeth. Praise Yahweh, we do the soft one. We brush our teeth and take our shower. But on this fast, we heal. On the Day of Atonement, your body is healing because Yahweh made us so that our bodies will heal if we just step back, give it an opportunity to do it. Now, on that day, this is what's occurring. Your body, all of a sudden, probably about after 12 hours, says, she's not going to eat. She's fasting. Wait a minute. She's not going to drink. We're going to die. Hurry. Look for water. So it goes to your fat cells, which are 70% water, and it takes the water out of them and destroys them. So that's a plus. You're going to lose some fat on that day. And then when it runs out of the fat cells, which for some is sooner than others, but when it runs out and it needs more water, it will go to your weak, sickly cells and destroy them and take their water. Can you imagine? And then your immune system, what that would do for your immune system, all these half-sick cells will be gone, and then they will be replaced with healthy ones. Pastor has told us for years to fast, that it's great for our health. In the 7th book of Israel, 2:31-4, he says, let me see. I got some notes here somewhere and think I had to cover before I get into this other. Oh, yes, fasting. Yes, fasting. We still have a lot of sickness in our people. I don't want to lose any of you. I don't want to lose anyone. I can tell you one of the best things a person could do, and I've taught this, I guess, for 150 to 200 years, is that fasting and prayer are one of the healthiest things a person can do. Now, you're required to do that once a year. We just did that not long ago. Some great examples, like 2 times a week or, you know, things like that, have been taught in the scriptures. Sisters, there is nothing that will heal us quicker than fasting. And I'm not recommending anyone does it. I'm just going to give you the facts about it, especially dry fasting, because the scientists, you know, they've told us, and the doctors, you'll die. If you don't drink water in 3 days, you'll die. That's not true. There's like all kinds of facts on the internet and YouTube that will tell you that people that do it 10 days, but just one day, 24 hours, does miracles in our bodies if we let it. Now, in the Matrix, can you put that in? I put in, we dry fast on the day of Atonement. And it came up in the Hebrew 25:08. In the Greek, it says cleanse from filth and impurity. Can you imagine that? Now, that can be mental and physical. In the English, 1848, and it reduced to nothing. And that's how you feel at the end of the day, reduced to nothing. And in the simple, 308. Look up, recover sight. And after you've done a fast and you've really done it with a positive attitude, you feel like you've recovered your sight. Some of the benefits are anti-aging. We love that, right? Weight loss. It'll lower your bad cholesterol, raise the grade. It reduces inflammation. They say if you dry fast for 3 days, you will have no inflammation in your body. That's a miracle. It decreases your blood sugar. I can testify to that because my sugar went way down that day. It helps reduce insulin resistance, cell regeneration. It stimulates stem cells. And here's the best, and this is probably the main thing. It improves your cognitive function. It improves our brain. What we take in, we can absorb it better. So just think about how awesome Yahweh is, because he wanted to make sure that we knew what we were doing. Yes, we're afflicted, but we're afflicted a lot by how we think about it. I think if we start thinking about it as Yahweh made it, that we're healing our body, it's an awesome day. So one example would be the Holocaust victims. They did a study on them, and the Holocaust, they live to an old age. I've seen a lot of them where they do these things where they give their testimony. They're old. The reason they found out that they lived so long is because of the time that they were in the camps and they had only a little food. Because what we do, the American system has programmed us to eat ourselves to death. And they give us all the poison food they can possibly give us to do it. Then they want you to go to the doctor. And you can tell the doctor, well, would it help if I changed my diet? No. but it would. It would save your life. Now, some of us have trouble not eating. Some people like to eat all the time. I'm one of them. I know you wouldn't know it, but I could eat all day long. I used to. So there's a way you can stop that and help that also. What I did, I just quit eating at a certain time of the day. Because when we go to bed with that food all in our stomach, we won't heal. That's our healing time. Our sleep is our healing time. But when we go to bed full of food, it's our digesting time. So I stop at a certain time and then I wait and eat the next day again. But there's so many ways, because overeating is one of the worst things a person can do. It's not healthy. And if you ever ate a big meal and then you can't hardly stay awake and you can't think, that's why, because your body can't handle all that at once. Now, they have a lot of examples on YouTube and stuff, but they say that the longest dry fast that a person ever did was 18 days. I can't imagine that, but they must have been a big person, you know, and had a lot of cells. But they actually have a thing, too, where this one man fell out of an airplane without his parachute, and his whole right side of his body was paralyzed. He dry fasted. He was probably the 18-day one, but he dry fasted until his body was healed. Yahweh made our body so perfect. That's how we could, if it weren't for sin, we could live forever, because our bodies would grow new limbs if we took care of them. But in this world, it's hard to do. But we have all the tools. We have all the information. We can help ourselves. And let me tell you, there's nothing cheaper than fasting. I mean, you can save a lot of money. Or cutting back on your food or whatever it is. That's what Pastor said. He hardly eats anything. But you feel great when you don't eat all the time. So in the eighth book of Israel, part 1, 25:3, Pastor says, I don't think you could hurt yourself by fasting. Really? Unless you just starve yourself to death. And we sure wouldn't do that. It's a very healing. We get more healing by fasting than ever, ever before. All kinds of disease cleared up during the last fast. And I can testify, fasting will help your body. I know that for a fact. But it's all up to each individual. But it is a way that we can help ourselves along, because Yahshua is coming, and I know he's going to heal us. But I want him to look at me and say, well, I don't have a lot to do. Or Pastor, you know, I want to be as best I can be when he comes. And that's how we have to be. We can't say, oh, well, I'm just going to eat this, and I'm not going to take care of myself. He's coming, he'll heal me. No, that's not the way to go. Heal yourself now, because we got hard times coming. And we've got to have self-control. And if we are addicted to our food, cigarettes, anything, we won't be able to withstand the attacks. So let's get together and have self-control and take care of ourselves and get well. And with that, I just wanted to read this real quick. I know I'm past, but in Psalm 139:14, it says, "We praise you, for we are fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, as we know very well." And we are, sisters. We are wonderfully made. That I turned over to the next speaker.
Shalom, please be seated. So a couple weeks ago, I was going through my closet. I was looking for something, and I ran across a House of Yahweh treasure. And as I was looking through it, it reminded me just how much that we as a body have come, how far we have come. So I'm going to show you what it is. Many of you, when you see it, you're going to know exactly what it is. Some of you will have never seen it before, but oh, it's there. Okay. Yeah, the reporter, the House of Yahweh newsletter. And this is a newsletter that the House of Yahweh put together many, many years ago. It was used to keep up with all the different areas all over that was in the House of Yahweh. We had, you know, New York, and there was Virginia, and there was Wisconsin, and, you know, wherever there was a branch in the House of Yahweh, we only had the sermon tapes at that time to listen to in order to keep up with the House of Yahweh. So, and they didn't always come on time, and so sometimes we were a little behind. So what we would always write, like a paragraph and send it into Abel, they would put together this newsletter, and then we would get it mailed to us. I'm going to give you an example. Just read a real quick passage. This one is from 2002. This one's green. I saved all of mine because I love them so much. And this one is from the New York branch. I'm just going to read a quick little passage out of it. It says, "This past new moon, we had a combined Brooklyn-Queens Sabbath gathering. What a blessed time we had. It was a full day, beginning with Sabbath school for the children, law classes for men and women, a taped sermon by our beloved pastor, followed by lesson plan workshops and speech classes for the men and women. It would have been a perfect ending to a perfect day if we were able to see the new moon, but with all of the tall buildings blocking our view, we were not able to find a place high enough to see the new moon." And so that's just an example. You know, when back in the day, all the areas outside, all the different branches, we had to be really creative in coming up with our classes and things like that, because we didn't always have a tape that week to listen to. But fast forward to today, and the work has come so far, right? We've got the increase in knowledge that has brought us the internet. So, of course, you know, we can listen to these things live now. And with the increase in knowledge, you know, the internet has brought a lot of evil into this world. But where there's a work of Satan, we know there's also a work of Yahweh, right? Amosha 3:6, will Yahweh not also have a righteous work there? And so we have these live classes and sermons now that we can listen to and watch. And it just reminded me how far we've come as a work, you know? Yahweh continues to bring us closer and closer together in unity as a body under our pastor and overseer. And he sees our efforts and all that we're doing. And, you know, he's blessed us with the linen garments and with all of this progression that we've had with it, within the House of Yahweh. It did not come without a whole lot of work and a whole lot of workers. And it took everybody doing their part in order to get to this point, to where we are now. And it took dedicated workers who refused to quit, who refused to give up, no matter how hard the going gets. You know, we just get tougher. And we have to be willing to put in that work. And for those of us who refuse to give up, we will be rewarded greatly. Father Yahweh has great rewards for us. And for those of us who aren't putting in the work, who are not putting in the work, it's also important to note that we also have a reward coming to us as well. But it's a far different kind of reward. And we know that in Revelation 22:12, Yeshua says, "And behold, I come quickly, and my reward is with me to give every man according as his work will be." So how will we be rewarded? The House of Yahweh is moving forward. We're overcoming. We're being promoted. It's fulfilling prophecy. And we have to constantly be examining ourselves as individuals to see where do we fall in that work. Because we can be in the House of Yahweh, and we can be baptized, and we can claim it, and we can own it. But if our works are not of the House of Yahweh, our reward is going to be based on that, sisters. In the third book of Israel, pastor is talking about this very thing. And he's reading and he's expounding upon Hebrews 12:1-2. I'm just going to read that real quick. It says, therefore, we must pay more careful attention to the things we have heard, so that at no time should we let them slip away. But since the words spoken by Malachim is steadfast, and every transgression and disobedience receives a just repayment of reward. And Pastor's expounding upon this scripture, and he's in the third book of Israel, chapter 5, verse 104, and Israel says, Pastor says, this is what you are going to receive as your inheritance, Yahweh says. This is the reason that Esau lost his inheritance, because he received his just reward. Listen to this part. Pastor says, whatever his life was, that was his inheritance. Whatever his life was, that was his inheritance. Now, he had the opportunity to keep the laws of Yahweh and actually fulfill the scriptures as Jacob did, but he threw it away. We have every opportunity here in the house of Yahweh, sisters, to get the greatest rewards from Yahweh. And we all have the same opportunity. There is absolutely nothing holding us back but us. It's the only thing. It's the only thing. We will not have any excuses. So as we draw closer to the end, and Satan's energy gets stronger and our tests get harder, we have to remember that we're being judged in open and behind closed doors. Yahweh sees all. It doesn't matter, but never give up the righteous reward that is promised to us if we do righteousness. It's conditional. We cannot become complacent or lazy. Now is the time to put every single effort that we have within our bodies that we can muster up to hold on and to endure and to continue on with all that we have. Now is not the time to give up or give in to Satan. In the fourth book of Israel, the reverence of Yahweh, number 9, verse 94, Pastor says, Hebrews 10:35, therefore do not cast away your confidence, which has a great recompense of reward. Yes, this is a great reward that we have to look forward to here too. We have all the time in eternity. We will never die. It is eternity that we're going to be given by Yahweh. He will give us all the universe, all the things his hands have made, and we will enjoy them from then on. Again, it's conditional. There's no doubt that living in this time period spoken about throughout all of scriptures is a very difficult time. Sin is at its peak, and we're dodging, you know, sin from every direction, and we're trying to, you know, keep our minds together and keep our focus on the goal. But I have to skip through some of this. Okay, the last days is the best days to be called in, because it's the greatest work spoken of in the scriptures. And it's the greatest time to be called in for those of us that are a part of the work. Okay? Pastor said in the second book of Israel, chapter 10 and verse 70, so he says, 1 Corinthians 12:28. Now Yahweh has appointed some among the called out ones, first apostles. Do you remember the apostles said that they were workers? Do you remember that? They worked day and night to get the word out to others as Yahshua had commissioned them. In these last days, we have a commission that is far greater than the apostles. We could have stopped a couple of years ago and still actually bragged about the fact that Yahweh has done more work through this last remnant than he had done throughout any remnant throughout history. Yahweh himself brags about us through the scriptures, saying that the greatest work of all is done by the few in these last days and will be remembered forever. He's bragging about you as individuals who are part of this work right here. Now, Yahweh is bragging on his workers. He's not bragging on those who are just in the house of Yahweh. No. He's bragging on those who are in the house of Yahweh, those who are striving to keep the laws, those who are doing his work, those who are obeying the teachers. That's who he's bragging on. It's up to us to make sure that we fit into that category. And if we're unsure where we stand, we have to get that confidence. Go to our counselors and get that confidence and stand in your place and do this work so we can be the one that Yahweh is bragging on and know that we are. Time is so short, sisters, and I just want to leave you with this encouragement from 2 Yochanan, verse 8. It says, look out for yourselves that you do not lose those things which we have worked for, but that we will receive a full reward. I pray that Yahweh truly blesses your understanding, and I would like to turn it over to the next teacher.
Shalom. Praise Yahweh. Please be seated. I am the last speaker, so just hang on. Hang on. Praise Yahweh. The title of my speech today is Which Kingdom is Recruiting You? And I'd like you all to take out paper, or if you have it out, get ready. I'm going to ask you some questions. Now, if the question I ask, if your answer is yes, I want you to make a little tick mark, a little line on your paper. If the answer is no, then don't put anything. Okay? And keep it private. This is just for you. Your neighbor don't need to see your paper. So if your answer is yes, make a tick mark. If the answer is no, don't put anything. So I want everyone to get your paper ready because I don't want anyone to be embarrassed. So question number one. I do a confession before every Sabbath. And now while you're thinking of that, I am going to be using the word every a lot. Every means every, okay? So I do a confession before every Sabbath. If the answer is yes, make a little tick mark. If the answer is no, don't put anything. Number two, I pay first tithes and put back second tithes on every paycheck or blessing I receive. One tick for yes, nothing for no. Number three, I am quick to obey instructions and do so willfully and joyfully every single time. Don't laugh. One tick for yes, none for no. Number four, I am truly thankful to be in the house of Yahweh. Number five, I have not complained one time about anything since feast started. Oh, wow. And the last one, I pray at least three times a day, every single day. Okay, so just hold on to that right now, and let's turn over to Matithia 25. Matithia 25, and we'll start in verse 1. Then the kingdom of Yahweh may be compared to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. And five of them were wise, and five were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps, but took no oil with them, while the wise took oil in their jars with the lamps, with their lamps. And while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight representing the darkest time of night, at midnight there was a cry made, "Behold, the bridegroom comes. Go out to meet him." And they all rose and they trimmed their lamps. And then the foolish said to the wise, "Give us your oil, for our lamps have gone out." But the wise answered, "No, there might not be enough for us. Go buy oil and come back." But while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the doors were shut. Now, I want you to go back to your paper, and I want you to count up how many tick marks, how many little lines you have on your paper. And I want you to consider each one of those tick marks as 1 ounce of oil. And I have a lamp. This lamp holds 6 ounces of oil. If the bridegroom came today, how many ounces of oil would be in your lamp? And I don't say this in judgment. I say this for all of us to consider. The time has come to make ourselves ready. For when the chief servant comes, it'll be too late. What are we going to say? "Oh, just a second, Yahshua. I'm going to go run and confess right quick, and then I'll be back. Hold on, Yahshua. I need to go make right some tithes I didn't quite pay, and then I'll come back to get my sentencing." No, it will be too late. The time is now to make ourselves ready. And then continuing on in Matthew 25, verse 11, they came back and they said, "Ruler, ruler, open for us."
open for us. But he answered and said, I don't know you. And I want you to think about that. If someone came to your house, to your front door, knocked on your front door, and you opened it, and they said, hey, let me in. I don't know you. You're not coming in my house. Picture this in your mind. We don't want to stand before Yeshua and have him say, I don't know you. I don't remember seeing you working day and night in my house. I don't remember seeing you confessing each day, before each Sabbath day. I don't remember you working hard, making mistakes, yes, but making them right. I don't even remember seeing you in services. I don't know you. Think about this, sisters. This is the point we are at right now. Yes, we are tested. Exodus 20:20, we know that. We are tested. But the time has come for us to recognize, what are we doing with the tests? Are we using them as tools to help us to grow stronger for Yahweh's kingdom? Or are we using them as excuses to desire Satan's kingdom? There are only two kingdoms. And again, I ask you as the title of my speech, which kingdom is recruiting you? At the maze the other day, I had the blessing of being able to go through and at the peaceful scene, go through the maze and read the signs. Who got to do that? If you did not get to do it, I do encourage you to go. There was one sign in particular that really stuck out to me. And it was when Overseer was talking about Genesis 3:3 and the serpent, the Vatican, that how she used her system to begin recruiting mankind. And I'm a big word person. And, you know, our overseer doesn't just throw words out. He's very deliberate with his words. And that word recruiting really stuck out to me. And it means to enroll someone as a member or worker in an organization or as a supporter of a cause. So again, I ask you, who are we allowing to recruit us? Which organization are we standing in support of? Now is not the time to grow weary, my sisters. Now is not the time to give up on becoming perfect. It is an obtainable goal. And we know and believe that because Yahweh said the laws make us perfect. And Yahweh cannot lie. He cannot lie. So it is possible. We've got to get rid of that negative thing. Oh, I'm not going to make it anyway. That is the gods recruiting you for their kingdom. Every time those words, I'm not going to make it anyway, come out of our mouths, that is the gods handing out their pamphlets. You know how the military, they hand out pamphlets to get you to join the armed forces? Think of these things. That is the gods trying to recruit you into their kingdom because Yahweh's way is black and white. You do this, you get this. You make a mistake, this is what you do, now you're back on track. It's very easy, and we've got to remember how easy it is. We've got to prove which kingdom we are in support of. And I want to go to Revelation 19, verse 7 and 8. These are scriptures we've heard many times this feast. Let us be glad and rejoice and give honor to him. For the marriage of the Lamb is come, and the house of Yahweh, all the virgins who have been chosen and have made themselves ready. And to them was granted that they should be arrayed in fine linen, clean and white. For the fine linen is the righteousness of the saints. And that word granted, remember before the feast, our overseer told us to look up that word? That word granted, it's actually a legal term. If you've ever bought land, if you've ever bought anything, you can look at your warranty deed and you'll see there's a grantor who is the one selling the land and a grantee who is the one accepting it. This right here, this point in the house of Yahweh's history, right here, right now, ownership of the universe is being granted to us. Do we recognize that? That's where we are right now. Have we made ourselves ready? And let me just as a subnote, so no one thinks anything, Yahweh will always be everything. He will always own everything. But he wants to give this universe to his family. So at this time, I do encourage us,
put the lamps in our oils every single time. Every. That's our new word. Every. Every time we're going to do this. And when our ruler, our chief servant comes, our lamps are going to grow so brightly. When we hold them up, our faces are going to shine. And Yeshua is going to go, I know you. Enter into this kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the earth. Praise Yahweh. And I do pray you will all stand. Yahweh bless you. And I do ask at this time, you all join in with me with this very humble honor to turn services to our great and mighty priests of the kingdom of Yahweh.